begin the day, then becoming partly sunny. And right now, 14 degrees here in Kalamazoo. Well, Professor Lori Sims will be performing for the world, essentially, next Wednesday in a concert that begins at 7 o'clock with the live and interactive portion of the concert. Western Michigan University presents a series that always begins with an in-depth interview with the artist, and that's the beginning for next week at 7, and then 7:30 begins the recital. Lori is in the studio here at Classical WMUK with me right now. We are live on this Wednesday, February 10th, a week away from your recital. So yes. You still have a little more practice time, I guess.
Yes. Every hour counts.
Nice to see you in person. While we were talking off air, you said this is kind of a pandemic recital, pieces that you've learned during this crazy time.
Yes, I think that many artists and also just people in general will identify with the experience of first realizing that you're shut away and thinking, boy, this is really terrible. And then that next phase, which says, gosh, I have all of this time. I should be reading War and Peace, and I should learn, you know, this huge thing that I never had time to learn, and I should do this and that and the other. And then kind of addressing all the shoulds, and then one day also just crashing from that sort of, wow, you know, but why, you know, I'm not playing, I'm not, and what should I do? And then sort of falling down again. And most of the people that I talk to, my artist friends and my students as well, found themselves in sort of this erratic work and slump behavior, work Netflix. And it's exhausting. Mm. And once again, my activity as a teacher and I felt so kind of sad for my students, because I understood that, you know, they've never been through it. I haven't been through this either. And so I thought, you know, I have to try to figure out how we can all get back on board. So I instituted this, you know, we were all going to sort of commit to practicing 45 minutes a day, you know, and start and add 15 minutes a day. But the idea was just whatever you can do, just like try to do it every day and try to be gentle with yourself. And so, you know, of course, I had to, that makes me have to look at myself too. And I realized, you know what, I'm doing these things because I think that I should be doing things, but what I keep dreaming of practicing are this other stack of pieces. And I finally just thought, okay, I'm just going to go there. I'm just going to play this music, which for whatever reason is what I need to do. And then I could really stay in the groove. And it's continuously made me drawn me back to the piano and made me happy. Now, whether this speaks to anybody else, I have no idea, but it speaks to me, and that's important. And so it's kind of a representative recital. I do want to quickly say as well that this the format of this recital next week, where we usually have an interview, this will be featuring, it's going to be a little different. We have Representative Tim Hoy from Detroit Steinway, because in addition to this program, we are going to have this phenomenal instrument on stage, the Steinway Sperio, which is something that has just come out in the last few years. It's an instrument that allows you to both have the advantage of the Super Steinway, but also to have recording devices. I mean, it's built into the piano. And so that the piano has, I think it's like 1,000 different sensors, and it's taking sort of these through the iPad rather than a MIDI system, which is what the disc clavier uses.
Right. I was thinking, didn't Yamaha start this idea of capturing sound on an acoustic piano?
Which it's, but that's about 20 years old, believe it or not.
Yeah, and now it's Steinway's turn.
Now it's Steinway's turn. And so the Steinway is using an iPad to be able to do this. And because it has, let's see, 10,000 or 1,056 levels. And it senses all of these things 800 times per second. So what they're touting, and which I have actually experienced, we played them in New York last year when we were there, is that the playback is almost identical to the performance. And the long range plan for this is that they're right now conducting, they're probably in late spring, they will have the ability that if I would play here in Tokyo, for example, it could be simultaneously heard on their piano. So this, you know, and maybe like last March, I was like, oh, you know, that's fun. It's kind of like a Tesla, you know, bells and whistles. Yeah. Let's go 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. But now it's so amazing how this pandemic, when we have to try to teach students from afar, I'm teaching currently a student in Korea and a student in China, the students from Western who were there and can't come back. I have a private student in Iowa because she didn't have a teacher there. And where Zoom gets us, gosh, an awful long way, what would it be like to be able to demonstrate something and they would be able to hear it and see it and we could hook this all together? So it really opens the whole world to of new ways of teaching, of new ways of performing, not to mention that in these recordings that you can make. Now, I'm not really sure about how I feel about this with my students. You can edit them right there on your iPad. So say I don't like a wrong note, I can just go beep and take it out. So anyway, the pre-concert lecture will be actually directed by Tim Hoya, and he's going to show us how this all works and all of the bells and whistles. And so it should be a really fascinating presentation and something that I think people will be really fascinated to watch how it works.
My guest, Laurie Sims, will perform next Wednesday. The presentation begins at 7, music begins at 7:30, and you can tune in on YouTube. The Western Michigan University School of Music has a YouTube channel, and the link to that concert, it will be live when you go to wmich.edu/music/events next Wednesday, and you'll hear this Spirio, very advanced technology from Steinway. Have you actually had a chance to play this instrument yet?
So I very cursorily, if that's a word, played it in New York last year, just enough to, you know, find out the wow factor. I'm excited it's arriving.
It doesn't feel like a synthesizer or anything.
Oh, no. That's the thing. It feels like a beautiful Steinway D. So it's arriving tomorrow. So I get to do some serious investigation. And one of the things I'm performing on the program is I'll do a little duet with myself. So I'll pre-record and then play the other part just to show how this actually functions and how exciting. Not that I'm getting rid of my four hands partner. That's not the right idea here. This is just to show everybody what the capabilities are and kind of how exciting it is.
Let's take a musical break with Laurie Sims. This is from your recording of the Bach Goldberg Variations. And we're playing it because Bach is on the program. What is the selection you have for next Wednesday?
So I'll be playing the 6th Partita in E minor.
And on a, you know, from 1 to 6, is this your favorite or just the how you feel this year?
Yes, I have a hard time picking between the partitas. This partita, I particularly love because it is a little thorny.
Does it appeal to your romantic spirit?
It does definitely the romantic spirit, because the Sarabande is absolutely way out there. Mm. I mean, it's sort of without boundaries. So if you had a wailing moment during the pandemic, this would be how it would sound. And on the other hand, something like the Gigue, which is the whole thing is based on sevenths and lots of chromaticism. So there's something that is really gritty and pugnacious and But I think, it, you know, in the end, Bach always manages to, even though he pulls you through it, at the end, there's some sort of victory. Hello.
You didn't think I could get there, but I did.
Yes. And you're like, oh, thank goodness. There is light at the end of the tunnel.
We'll be back to talk to Laurie Sims about further pieces on the recital, which will go live next Wednesday at 7 p.m. The link to the YouTube channel where you can view the entire program is at the School of Music website, wmich.edu/music/events. We had to quickly jump out of that next variation from the Goldberg Variations, a performance by Laurie Sims, who's in the studio with me here on Classical WMUK today, previewing a concert next week. It'll be available on the School of Music's YouTube channel starting at 7 o'clock next Wednesday as part of the Live and Interactive series. And we've been talking about the Bach Partita number 6 that you'll play, and also that the instrument is called Steinway Spirio. I want to give it an Italian ring. Spirio.
I like it.
Which not only will, project the music acoustically, but at the same time, using high technology, we'll be recording the action of the piano in a form that can be replicated on another Spirio piano. Mm-hmm. So great introduction to new technology, and Laurie Sims will be taking it out for a spin next week at 7 o'clock. We just listened to music from the Goldberg Variations, which you recorded a few years ago at the behest, I believe, of Dan Gustin, the voice on your shoulder who often
actually I'm trying to remember if no
no
that was a different that was actually part of a sabbatical project. And I went into the then director David Colson and said, you know, I thought I had to have some really zany projects about, you know, I don't know. And he's like, well, why don't you just record the Goldberg? I'm like, oh, I can do that? Okay, sure. So I am actually very glad that I did that, because, you know, there is a time limit for those sorts of things. I mean, it's a big, long piece, and it's one needs to do that sort of at the perfect physical point, I think.
We were talking off air just now about how one take performances are for you a little more truthful. If you're going to record, you often prefer or choose to record live, mm-hmm. In front of people. And like other classical artists and orchestras do, they'll record several concerts of the same program, mm-hmm. and just bring the best of it together.
Yes, and I think it comes from the recordings I love best are live recordings. And I think at a certain point I recognized when I would, when I was college age or something that I would, you know, hear a recording and then I would go and hear that same person live. And often I would notice that there was just a tremendous difference in inspiration and that the music really came off the page. And one of the performers that I often direct my students to reconsider is the pianist Alfred Brendel, who sometimes I think, and probably he doesn't have as much, I don't know how much say-so he had in his recordings. Sometimes I find the recordings a little bit scholarly. And in performance, he was just an absolutely riveting, exciting, passionate pianist where it was like a very, very different statement. So I came to really, I heard him actually play most of the Beethoven sonatas in Berlin when I was living in Germany. And it was just something I will not ever forget. And the same thing with someone like Pollini, who gets known for, you know, playing perfect renditions of the Chopin etudes and all sorts of things. And in fact, in real life, it may not be, I mean, it's just phenomenal. It may not be as perfect in a way, but the musicianship is so wonderful and deep and off, you know, and it's the artistry that comes in. And part of the reason I do live is I'm not sure. Yeah, again, when somebody once told me that there were 100,000 cuts in a great recording, I thought, wow, that doesn't really seem like it's music anymore. That just sounds like a jigsaw puzzle or some sort of paint-by-numbers sort of, or, yeah.
The engineer put it together, not the artist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think for myself, I thought, you know, if you listen to a recording of me, I don't want you to then come to my concert and be disappointed that you expected something different. I'd like it to be as close as possible. Now, am I going to take out the super wrong note? Of course I am, but maybe I don't want to remove everything.
Speaking of Bach, I think Glenn Gould kind of went the opposite route where the live experience... I think he turned his back on that and just felt like I can tinker in the studio and that will kind of create the exact impression I want to make.
And that was his genius. I mean, that was, I don't fault him for doing that. But I think that the intensity that he with which he was really approaching that project, and also because he was doing it himself. Mm-hmm. It wasn't being handled by an engineer or a group of people saying, hey, we heard a wrong note, we're yanking that, even if the performer wanted that. There's something a little different, and it does go along also with Gould's particular tendencies. I mean, he was pretty OCD, right? So, and that's fine. That's who he is as an artist. Sometimes I'm amazed at how he could still project such unbelievable artistry. And yet, you know what? His live recording of the Goldberg is absolutely so amazing. So he can say whatever he wants, but he's, for me, there's just nothing wrong with it.
Well, let's move on to Chopin. You're performing the Ballade number 4, and I haven't seen Chopin on your programs for a while.
Yeah.
Even though
and that was a very you know, like everybody, I had some times of really deep melancholy and sadness. And, you know, you think about Chopin being in Paris and always longing for the homeland. And I long for people. I long for my family. You know, there's been lots of heartbreaks. There's been lots of disappointments that we have had to face during this time because we didn't have another choice, right? It's sort of that's the thing. When you have lots of time, lots of things come to a head. And that was a more recent thing. So I have a Nocturne and I have a 4th Ballade, things that are very, I think, really deal with letting go of the past, or letting go of heartbreak, letting go of all these kinds of things that have occurred to us. And, you know, and I'm using that very symbolically. I mean, at some level, there has been a lot of heartbreak during this pandemic time and a lot of sadness. So, yeah, that has been very helpful to me, actually, the Chopin part.
you won the 1998 Gina Bachauer International Piano Competition in 1998.
Yeah, about 2,000 years ago. Who is that again?
for the I hate to say circuit, but I'm you know, when you are a competing pianist, there are standards that you kind of cannot avoid when mm-hmm. you're preparing programs like mm-hmm. this. Chopin being ever present on competitioned style pianist programs because he was. There's a specific skill set that
oh, yeah.
you need?
Oh, yeah. I avoided it like the plague then. No, sir. No, I did not do that. I carved a way around that. I've come to Chopin actually much, again, that's been something that I've come to understand and love much more later in life, you know. And when you're a kid, you hear, oh, you haven't been through life, you have no idea, and you really push against that. Well, it turned out to be a little true.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little true. I mean, I feel like I have a much stronger understanding of that, maybe what that emotional world is like.
I'd love that, you know, Frédéric Chopin's ghost kind of appeared in your studio and said, now is the time.
Yes, exactly. No, that's really, it's like, no. Lori, here I am. Come to me now. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, he deals very well with the, in his music and the, his emotional world deals with regret, but also the acceptance of regret.
A little bit of heroism as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The nocturnes are shorter pieces, mm-hmm. And the ballades are bigger. They're mm-hmm. substantial. Do they literally tell a ballad or a story in them?
Yes. I mean, and there have been connections to actual stories, but I think that might limit Chopin a little bit too much. But yes, there is a narrative style that he represents in a rondo form, which means that he returns to a certain thematic material throughout the piece, and that serves as a every time we go through, say, a B section or a C section, we of course view the A section a little bit differently. That's where the narrative occurs. Is how we start to evolve our understanding of what the A was.
We have your 2000 recording of the Ballade in G minor, Opus 23. Which we'll listen to now.
Okay.
And remind listeners that Laurie Sims performs live next week, starting at 7 p.m. Wednesday night as part of the live and interactive session. She'll be performing on Asperio Steinway, and the concert will be broadcast live on the School of Music's YouTube channel. You can find the link at wmich.edu/music/events. Music of Chopin. If you just tuned in, we heard a recording by Laurie Sims of the Ballade in G minor, Opus 23. Next Wednesday, she will perform the Ballade No. 4 on her program for the live and interactive series. You'll be able to access it at 7 p.m. on the School of Music's YouTube page. Laurie Sims is with me here at Classical WMUK in the studio, and we have one more work to talk about. But perhaps tell us how the Ballade Number 4 is the similar or different from the Ballade Number 1 in G minor. Is it a different key? I'm sure it's a different key.
Yeah, it's a different key. The fourth ballade is much later, written much later, and it's definitely more, it has more sections of kind of when Chopin goes into his very chromatic improvisational type of material. Improvisationals, maybe not that, but yeah, there are some points where it's sort of written down improvisation, and it has even more aspects of reflection and really stepping out of the world. My old teacher used to talk about the dream within the dream, and it has more moments like that. That's a very similar. The Nocturne I'm playing is also very late, and they both have that aspect. The first ballade is maybe we only go from reality to dream. it's younger in that way.
The dream within a dream. I think that's a Edgar Allan Poe poem as well.
Oh,
yeah. Which adds a touch of horror to it, I think.
Yes, it can. Yes. Oh, thank you, Kara.
I could be wrong.
She's picked up on my vibe. Actually, as we listen to this, this little walk through time recordings from 21 years ago, I'm also aware of, I sort of feel like I have to tell the audience that my fingers just do not move that fast anymore. So that's how it goes.
I'll let you say that that's true, but I think if it is true, it's like just micro a bit slower if anything. We won't know the difference, believe me.
Okay, well, I hope not.
It's at 7 o'clock next Wednesday for the live and interactive series. We're kind of saving the most mysterious piece to the end, and you're finishing with this single sonata for piano by Henri Dutilleux,
yep.
The 20th century. And he wrote a great flute sonata. That's about all I know about.
There we go.
Henri.
Yeah, yeah. Henri, yeah. So this Dutilleux sonata has been on my stack of music for, 15 years. And here I am going to credit Dan Gustin, who at some point said, you know, Laura, you really ought to learn that piece. That's totally for you. And he knew Dutilleux at Tanglewood, where he worked, or he was the director of Tanglewood. And so I listened to the piece and I really liked it. And as I often do, I learned it first through a student. And that is also funny that this program, the Bach and the Dutilleux, I can all of a sudden I had to write to this former student of mine, Jonathan Cook, who actually grew up here in Kalamazoo and is a wonderful pianist. And I said, Jonathan, I realize that I've completely lifted your senior recital.
Yeah.
Well, they go so well together.
You like guinea pigs?
Yes. So the Dutilleux, and I've looked at it a number of times, and I don't know what it was other than why I suddenly, it's very French pleasant. It's got a little bit of a jazzy aspect to it. And of course, because I can't travel, all I can think about is going to Paris, and which always has wonderful connotations for me. And the last time I was in Paris was about 4 years ago, and it was just fabulous. And there's something about this sonata that is just distinctly French. Dutilleux actually studied with Messiaen, or is under the influence, I should say, of Messiaen and of Ravel. And I feel like if Ravel and Messiaen had a composer child, this is the music that would arise. So it has a lot of the piano concerto in G major of Ravel, which is has considerable Gershwin influence. So
yeah, a little blues.
Yeah, some bluesy things. But then he has these kind of strong sort of glassy harmonic language of Messiaen, this clanging and this kind of lots of those kinds of instruments. So this is actually a wonderfully orchestral piece in many ways. It's also, he wrote it for his wife who was a pianist. It's perfectly, it uses all aspects of the piano. It's a really, from a pianistic point of view, it's kind of a dream.
Will you teach it again? I mean, does it deserve more?
Oh, I can almost guarantee that when my students hear it, they're going to be like, can I play that? Yeah, because it's a lot of fun. It's definitely delivers the punch. It has
three movements?
Three movements. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of pattern does he follow?
Strict sonata allegro first movement. The second movement is a lead. Or a song. Yes. And the third movement is maybe not. That's a theme and variations, but not very many variations. It's more has elements of tarantella and kind of a race to the finish, big clingy end.
I just cued like 2 seconds of it to make sure that it was ready to go. And those big chords at the beginning of the third movement struck me as American.
Like, you can hear Copland. You could hear something like, yeah, it's Fanfare of the Common Man. It's, this kind of really open sounds and very... lots of low brass, timpani, cymbals, everything you can think of. I mean, he's got the whole 100-piece orchestra out in this one.
Well, Laurie, it's been terrific spending time with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Face-to-face today at Classical WMUK. You can see Laurie on the WMU School of Music's Facebook page with this program, Bach Chopin Duthieu, next Wednesday at 7 p.m. Music starts at 7:30. You'll learn about the Steinway Spirio, which is the special instrument arriving soon and being installed at Western Michigan University in the Dalton Center Recital Hall, which is where I presume you will be performing from.
Yes.
And again, that's wmich.edu/music/events. You'll find the link to the concert right there. And I believe it's free. I didn't actually look it up. It may or may not be a small price for admission, or perhaps pay what you will. But take a look at that link, and we'll listen to the Duthieu final movement here. We have a recording from a pianist named John Chen, who went to Sydney, Australia in 2004 and won the Sydney International Piano Competition.